This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. There's a new push in Canada for a national investigation into the issue of missing and murdered Aboriginal girls and women. Many of the victims' families are telling their stories and saying police are not doing enough, Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The focus is on about 250 cases, some of which stretch back as far as 1951. Many of the families and loved ones of the victims share a painful bond of grief. Some are trying to heal that pain through sharing circles. M.A. Kraft is a lawyer and an Aboriginal advocate from Winnipeg. Kraft says more can and needs to be done.
So often we've looked at these women's stories, these unsolved crimes, as either a police investigation or a media story. And now I think it's a beautiful thing that we're actually looking at the stories of these individuals and digging down a little bit deeper into their lives and in a lot of cases, their unrealized potential by talking to their family members and friends and communities and knowing a little bit more about them.
Many of the families say their voices have not been heard, and without the stories, the healing process can't be complete. Kraft also says the federal government has refused to recognize the issue of murdered and missing Aboriginal women and girls across Canada as a sociological problem.
Right now, the Harper government has said, this is a question of criminality, this is not a sociological phenomenon, but a disappearance rate like we see it for Indigenous women in Canada, and for any group of disappearing women, necessitates an understanding and an acknowledgement that there is a sociological phenomenon that underlies this.
Kraft says what's needed is participation from the communities and the families to understand the problem. She says poverty is a huge issue that is often not acknowledged, and also the push for a national inquiry must continue. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Some Native Americans in Washington say the new fish consumption rules being proposed by the state are a step in the right direction, but may not go far enough. Steve Jackson reports.
The Department of Ecology is looking at a proposal to change the fish consumption rates in the state. If approved, the rules would result in a tightening of standards on the amount of pollution that could be released into state waterways. The new proposal dramatically increases the average fish consumption standards to 175 grams of fish per person per day. That's about the size of a fish fillet. That from the current standard of just over 6 grams of fish per day per state resident. Ecology says the standards need to be updated because of the diets of Native Americans and Asian residents. Jim Peters of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission says, as a member of the Squaxin Island tribe, the amount of fish eaten per day is actually much higher than the 175-gram figure.
It's really low compared. Like for Squaxin, which doesn't include shellfish, our fish consumption rate is around 280 to 300 grams per day. I know Suquamish is up towards the 600 level. Some of them are right around 300, and then Spokane's, I think, got theirs at 800.
Even so, Peter says he understands that Ecology came up with the number as an average of state consumption. Peter says he does have a problem with Ecology's proposal to raise the consumption rate while at the same time changing the acceptable cancer rate from one case per million to one in 100,000 people.
Our study at Squaxin actually indicates that kids under the age of 5 eat 6 times more fish than adults do. And so our kids are going to be impacted the most because of their immune systems being built up.
An official with the Department of Ecology says their agency is not yet offering any reaction to the many comments received during that public comment period in the new fish standards that ended last month. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide. The annual Tribal Telecom Golf Classic will be held May 4, 2015 at the Isleta Eagle Golf Course. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to a Juno Afternoon here for Tuesday, the 14th of April, the year 2015. Jeff Brown filling in for Scott Burton today. We'll talk with Jesse Herman Haywood and Giano about Friday's Southeast Alaska Cannabis Celebration. We'll get a preview of the music of Metalis M5 Brass Concert coming up on Sunday. We'll talk with John Beadle, this week's Pillars of America speaker. Also, Doug Jones will be here with details about Thursday's Audubon presentation. Learn about the upcoming Safe Graduation Party as well. That Writer's Almanac Burn Note, Music and More today on the Juno Afternoon. Six minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Karen and Juno and KFM, and also in Juno. In the studio with us now, Giano and Jesse Herman Haywood, here to talk about Friday's Southeast Alaska Cannabis Celebration. Thank you for coming down to the station.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, what and why are you celebrating?
We're celebrating because we want to, we deserve to, and because we should. We're really excited that cannabis has been decriminalized, and so people don't need to hide anymore. We can talk about it in public. We can gather. We can listen to music and eat food and hang out and talk about it and be loud and proud.
But you can't smoke it in public.
Currently, you cannot.
What is the status of the rules, laws these days?
Well, I mean, for this event, we don't have a special use permit. There is a moratorium set by the city of Juneau, 6-month moratorium on any sort of special use permit. We kind of knew that going into the event, but we really wanted to bring the community together either way, at least to open up ideas and start the discussion and bring people out of the woodwork. And as Jesse said, nothing to feel bad about anymore. You know, the laws state you can't consume marijuana in public. Being that this is a public facility, we ask that people don't consume in the building. And, of course, anywhere on public property, for that matter, is the local city ordinance. And so there's a lot going on with state laws, and I know it's really confusing for people right now. It is based off what the initiative states. So I would read the initiative closely, and that would tell you exactly what you can and can't do.
What's the schedule of events?
We're going to start with starts at 5 p.m., and we're going to kind of – there's going to be a lot of business vendors there. It is a food event as well, but the beginning of the event is going to be focused on businesses and entrepreneurship and really conversations about ideas. We want to promote that. And then there's also going to be the entertainment starting at 5 and going on through the night. So beginning of the event will be sort of focused on business vending, and then sort of it'll segue into sort of – the entertainment will kind of pick up towards the end of the night.
What kind of businesses are out there waiting to hop on it?
What kind of business hop on it, or what kind of businesses are going to be at the event?
Both.
Both, okay. Sky's the limit as far as hopping on it, because you can do a lot with cannabis. But as far as businesses are going to be there, we're really excited. We've got Happy Camper, a brand new food cart that's going to be opening up just for celebration. Pucker Wilson's, Pie in the Sky Cafe, there's going to be treats and drinks there. We've got... let's see, Johnny Fishmonger, he does oysters, so.
He's got a new oyster source this year he's pretty excited about, so he'll debut his new oysters at the event.
And he'll also be providing coffee service. We've also got a ton of local businesses. We've got the Happy Hippie, which is a business that's coming from Haines. We've also got Aurora Project, making local stuff. They're going to be premiering some local designs, or... they haven't been out yet. We've got Get Growing, which is
local cultivation store in town.
We also have Leaffly.
Leaffly, yep.
Leafly.
Yep, they're going to be there. So we'll have some things to give away, some products from them, T-shirts. They're a strain identification sort of website that you can go to. And if you're in an area and you're wondering what kind of strain you have or what type you're into, Leaffly.com will kind of give you the information you need and find the location to get it. So.
Seems like there's a lot of businesses waiting to cash in on the...
There are, and a lot of different ideas, and a lot of people have been approaching me with ideas, and I sort of tell them to come to the event, and there'll be plenty of people to talk to and make your dream happen, I think.
And as far as talking to people, Kevin Higgins will also be there, mm-hmm. and he's really excited to answer questions, and, you know, he's a lawyer, so...
Yeah,
we
also invited the chief of police and the some members of the local Juneau's marijuana committee. So hopefully there will be some city members there early on in the evening. If you'd like to talk to them a little bit about what's going on, I'm sure they'd be glad to listen.
What's Rainforest Farms?
Rainforest Farms is a marijuana company, business that my brother James Barrett and I started, the younger James Barrett. There's two in town, for the record.
We should clarify that.
We started this business. Right now, it's kind of a startup company. We obviously don't have a permit to sell anything yet, but we pride ourselves. I've been growing cannabis in the community of Juneau here for about 7 years now, and I really pride myself on growing a really clean flower, knowing where my sources are for ingredients that I'm feeding my plant and really creating an active root zone and a complete breakdown of everything in that root zone to create this really clean flowers. So that's kind of what we're all about, and looking forward to getting started as soon as we have a permit. So,
how soon does all that happen, do you think?
We're probably about 8 months away before that really happens. But we're plenty prepared.
You mentioned live music.
Live music. We've got a ton of it. Really excited. We've got DJ Gift, who is going to be opening. He is the only vinyl DJ still in the game, doing amazing stuff. He's going to be starting off at 5 o'clock. He'll probably do about a half an hour set. And then we've got Diatribe Northwest, which is TJ Manor and Meathead MC from Sitka. Hippity Hops is going to be pretty cool. Then at around 6 o'clock, there's going to be a short Q&A with a couple speakers. And then, let's see, the Woolpullers are going to be playing at around 6:20. They'll probably have a 45-minute set. They're pretty talented. Tons of new music, not to be missed for sure. We also have Gemini Waltz, which I don't know if there's four or six people in the band.
Or seven or eight.
Ryan keeps it changing.
They keep growing and growing.
But they're very talented. They just had a set at Saturday night at Folk Fest, and they were very well received. So we're really hoping everybody comes out for them. After that, we've got the Cloud People, which is George and Bridget Kuhar. Very talented. They are in a couple other bands, but they're going to be doing some kind of dreamy electronic stuff, not to be missed. We also have Silver Jackson, which is a three-piece band coming out of Sitka. He has been traveling around doing a lot of stuff. He's going to be premiering a new album, so that's pretty cool, not to be missed. And also OC Notes, who's a hip-hop artist who's big in the Seattle scene. He also has his own Kush Radio station.
Yeah, Kush Radio podcast.
So he's also interested in cannabis.
Which you can find on SoundCloud if you're interested.
Which is pretty cool. And then last but definitely not least, definitely a really exciting band we're happy to bring up, the Lost Boys of Sitka. They're an eight-piece group. They've got horns, drums, saxophone.
A good storyline to their music.
Very
fun. They're a fun group. They're young. They're excited. They're party animals, I'm pretty sure.
Let me make the assumption. They're not to be missed either.
That's right.
It's catching on, I think.
So 8 acts. It's going to be fantastic, and we hope everybody comes out. You can get your tickets at brownpapertickets.com, and you can go online and check us out on Facebook. And
how much are tickets?
They're $25 ahead of time right now, and then at the door they're going to be $35.
And if you're interested in vending, we offer free vending this year. The idea is really to just get people together. So we want to break even at least on this event. So we're really just trying to get people together, free vending. So if you still want to vend, it is sort of late, and it is a couple days away.
We have a couple booths open.
Contact us.
Yeah.
And we can work things out.
Is there a website that has more information on it?
You can go to, Brown Paper Tickets and look at all the information there.
There's also a public Facebook event page, which everybody can access as well.
So it's southeastcannabis.brownpapertickets.com.
And again, it's the Southeast Alaska Cannabis Celebration.
Happening this Friday. All right, Jenna and Jesse, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Yeah, thank you for having
us, Jeff.
Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Come to the event. I think you'll be surprised. There's no smoking this year, but I think people will be surprised at how much fun they'll have.
Yeah.
Cannabis community is a great community, and we've hit a really wide demographic, so come check it out.
Come check out the music scene.
Say, did you ever meet that Reaper man?
No, I never met the guy. Tell me about it.
Oh, no, you're not kidding me now, are you? You never met the Reaper man? Oh, no, you never met the Reaper man? And yet you say you swam to China and you wanted to sell me South Carolina? I believe you know the Reaper man. Did you ever meet the funny Reaper man? You never met the funny Reaper man? And yet you say you walk the ocean anytime you take a notion? Yeah, I believe you've seen the Reaper man. ¶¶
ever met that funny reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Oh, he trades your dimes for nickels and he calls watermelon pickles. Yeah, I'm talking about the reefer man. Ever meet that little old reefer man? Did you ever meet that little old reefer man? If he takes a sudden mania and he wants to give you Pennsylvania, I'm still talking about the reefer man. Have you ever met that little old reefer man? Ever met that funny little reefer man? If he sells Wall Street, it's frantic, and cause he won't sell them the Atlantic. Oh, that's that reefer man.
This station comes from Alaska Canopy Tours, offering canopy and zipline tours. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
I'm in the studio with John Beattie and Mandy Massey. John is a speaker for Glacier Valley Rotary, and Mandy works for Rotary and has all the information about tomorrow's speech. Thank you for coming down to the station.
Thanks very much for having me. Thrilled to be here in Juneau and thrilled to be in the station, thrilled to be speaking.
And John, you're known as the Clamor Guy.
That is the nickname I've become affectionately donned with, yes. I've climbed 6 of the 7 tallest mountains around the world, the 7 summits. Only one remaining for me now is in Antarctica. It's called Mount Vincent.
Does your mother know what you're doing?
This has become a theme across all the media appearances I've had. My mother is white-haired and definitely stressed about the lifestyle that I lead.
Talk to me about the 7 summits, please.
Sure. Dick Bass was the name of the guy who first created this challenge to climb the tallest mountain on every continent. And so, of course, here in Alaska, that's Denali for North America. And this has been a journey that I started in 2007. And just last July of 2014, I climbed Karstens Pyramid, the 6th one for me. Of course, now Everest is included in the list as well, which I climbed in 2013.
And I know everyone asks you, why do you do it?
They sure do. And the best I can explain this is just like a bird grows up in a nest and then has to go fly at one point, I just have to climb. I climbed trees when I was a little kid, and mountains are just a part of my DNA.
You're talking in front of the Glacier Valley Rotary tomorrow at noon at Centennial Hall. Doors open at 11:15, and lunch is served at 11:30. Mandy, could you give us a little background on why you selected John?
We choose from dozens of candidates to come up to Juneau and be one of our 3 speakers over the last 23 years. And they come from all walks of life. They've come from hardships of some sort and overcome them, from prisoners of war to military heroes to superstars. And we are so thrilled that John Beattie has agreed to come with us into this 23rd year. His adventures and stories are so inspirational, and he really speaks to the youth, really all people of all ages, but his willingness to reach out to the youth and inspire them at such an important age, when we have half of the people attending these speaker series are students, middle school ages and high school ages, I think it's really important to reach out to them as well.
John, you've got a book out called Climb On, Success Strategies for Teens, and a book coming out, Little Guide to Big Success. There must be a common thread that ties various parts of your life together.
The adventures are the themes that tie it all together, and then I try and pull motivational principles out of these adventures that I've had for my own good. And then I figure, well, if this has helped me so much, these ideas and concepts that I've pulled from the adventures, surely they could help other people as well, and that's what transpires in the books.
Without elaborating too much on it, can you give us a sample of a couple strategies?
Sure. The most important strategy, I think, for everyone, and really what I want to, what I would love for everyone to walk away with, is to have a passion for something big for themselves. And so I'm not here to talk about go climb mountains at all. I'm not here to evangelize, become a mountain climber. What I'm here to do is to help everyone come up with their own big life adventure or purpose, or their Everest, so to speak, for themselves. And if they can find that, then they're going to be filled with life and passion and a joy as they pursue that thing that makes them come to life. And so for me, it's literal mountains, but I'm here to really inspire a metaphorical mountain in everyone, whether teenager or adult who's in the audience.
Tell me more about The Little Guide to Big Success.
We changed the name of that one to The Mini Manual for Becoming Super Awesome. And
super.
And it is printed, and it's going to be available tomorrow as well. And it's a tiny little book because we're so busy that why not just give great little tidbits of advice that someone can jump in, read one page of the book, take and use that in their life. And so it's a 32-page quick little book that has on every page something that someone can use for themselves.
How much in your adventures do you rely on careful planning, or is it just dumb luck?
It started all as just dumb luck. One of my first mountains I ever climbed was the Grand Teton, and our whole safety plan was I was tied up to my climbing partner, and we didn't have any gear because we couldn't afford it. All we could afford was a rope. And so the plan was if one person fell, the other person jumps on the other side of a rock so that we could pendulum and suspend ourselves between the rocks. So when I started off, it was all dumb luck. And I see your face here looking at me like I'm as dumb as I thought I was back then when I did that. But now it's extremely careful planning. When you go to 2-month-long expeditions on Everest, or you go to the jungle in Papua, Indonesia, you need to have every step of the way meticulously planned out.
Is careful planning one of the success strategies?
It actually is. I call it gear up. And when I go out climbing, I put different gear on my harness, which is essentially the plan of how I'm going to safely get to the summit. And so careful planning in that translates as become very, very meticulous and clear about how you're going to arrive at your destination, and then follow the steps along the way.
You're an inspirational speaker. What inspired or who inspired you?
That's a great question. The outdoors, first and foremost, inspired me. My parents are the ones who put me into the outdoors in the first place by signing me up to go to scout camp, and their marriage and their life has inspired me hugely. And adventurers like Bear Grylls and speakers like Tony Robbins or Jim Rohn and Zig Ziglar are also big inspirations of mine.
You're talking tomorrow at 11:30, actually at noon at Centennial Hall. Mandy, do you want to give us an idea of the times?
Yes, the event is at Centennial Hall, and you'll want to get there early because parking can be a little difficult during the noon hour. Doors open at 11:15. You're welcome to get there early and in order to get the best seats to the house. And you can get your tickets at Hearthside Books, either location. And if there's any left, they'll be there at the door. But I would recommend that you not wait, because we have heard a great response from John Beattie's stories, and I think we're going to have a full crowd.
You've done a variety of adventurous and scary things. What's the most scariest?
The scariest of all my adventures was when I was stuck in Indonesia. I had just come down from Karstens Pyramid, the largest mountain in Australasia. And when we got down, the porters had stolen all of our food and equipment. And we had no way to get out. A lot of the people's shoes were stolen, boots were stolen as well. So half of us were barefoot. And a war had broken out between tribes. And they're in loincloths and shooting blow darts and bow and arrows back and forth between each other. And the only other way out was to the world's largest gold mine. And they blocked us, and they had machine guns and held us at a gunpoint and said, "You can't come this way, so go back towards the warfare." And we're stuck there for 7 days. Terrifying.
Was there also a scary taxi cab ride?
Yeah, in Bangkok, Thailand. I don't know whether that was scarier or just taking a taxi around Thailand.
Want to talk more about beach itself and how you use multimedia?
I like to think of it as a kind of a rock concert of motivation of what I put on. And so we're gonna rock the place tomorrow, because I've got video that coincides with music as I'm speaking to show exactly what I'm talking about. So you're gonna get to see live GoPro footage choreographed to music as I'm climbing Everest and these mountains around the world. We're gonna go to Kilimanjaro and a lot of the biggest mountains around the world that have brought me to this point in life, ultimately to inspire the biggest adventure for everyone who's there in the audience.
When you were climbing your first few mountains, in the back of your mind, were you thinking about delivering inspirational speeches?
No. It was after some of the crazy stories came up. I was a substitute teacher, in fact. And when there weren't any lesson plans left over, I didn't have any choice except just to tell some of these stories. And then next thing I knew, I was one of the most requested substitute teachers in the school district in Clark County. And they said, hey, why don't you give a speech to the whole school because of this? And so I did, and that's how my speaking career started. And so my early mountains stories are what started the career.
John Beattie, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me.
John Beattie's talk is sponsored by the Juneau Glacier Valley Rotary, Pillars of America Speaker Series. Doors open at Centennial Hall at 11:15, and lunch is served at 11:30.
The Alaska State Improv Festival is back with four nights of fun from April 23rd until April 26th. See Improv Boston All-Stars, Portland Duo, Joyride, and many others at Alaska's largest celebration of unscripted comedy. Shows begin at 6 p.m. in McTheaters Hall. Visit asifest.com for showtimes, listings, and tickets. Thursday to Sunday, April 23rd until the 26th, the Alaska State Improv Festival, asifest.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 14th of April, 2015. 1828, on this date, Noah Webster's American Dictionary of the English Language was published. It came at a time when Americans could hardly communicate with each other because regional dialects were so drastically different. Noah Webster was a schoolteacher. The textbooks in his school were from England. The student spelling was terrible. Bad spelling was a general condition in America. People assumed that there were several different spellings for any word. So he'd put together a spelling book. It was Webster who took the letter U out of English words like color and honor. And he spelled theater and center E-R instead of R-E. And he started compiling his dictionary, introducing American words, some of them derived from Native American languages, skunk, squash, wigwam, hickory, opossum, lengthy, and presidential, and Congress, and caucus, which were not so relevant in England. Spent almost 30 years on the dictionary. It cost so much when it came out, though, $15, $20, huge amount in 1828, and Webster died in 1843 without having sold many copies. He traveled around promoting the dictionary, lobbied for copyright law, wrote his own edition of the Bible, compiled a dictionary of medical conditions. He did the first census, and a recent biography of him argued that Noah Webster would today be diagnosed with obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. It was on this day, 1865, President Abraham Lincoln was shot by John Wilkes Booth in Ford's Theater in Washington, just 5 days after the surrender of the Civil War's Confederate leader, General Robert E. Lee. It was on this night, 100 years ago, the Titanic struck an iceberg on its way from Southampton, England, to New York City. The ship was designed with watertight compartments to withstand a head-on or side impact collision. Instead, it scraped along the side of an iceberg for 10 seconds, trying to avoid it, and it tore open numerous separate compartments. Less than an hour before, a ship nearby tried to radio the Titanic to be aware of ice ahead, and the ship's radio operator on duty, overwhelmed with his job of relaying personal messages to passengers, said, "Shut up, I'm busy." And a big day in the newspaper business. It's the anniversary of the first self-feeding rotary printing press in Baltimore. William Bullock was the inventor. 1863 was the date. Here's a poem for today by David Ray entitled Doing Without. Doing without is an interesting custom involving such invisible items as the food that's not on the table, the clothes that are not on the back, the radio whose only music is silence. doing without is a great protector of reputations, since all places one cannot go are fabulous, and only the rare and enlightened plowman in his field or on his mountain does not overrate what he does not or cannot have. Saluting through their windows of cathedral glass, those restaurants we must not enter unless, like burglars, we become subject to arrest. We greet with our twinkling eyes the faces of others who do without, the lady with the fishing pole and the man who looks amused to have discovered on a walk another piece of firewood. Doing Without, a poem by David Ray, from Gathering Firewood, published by Wesleyan University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, with its APRON project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
This Sunday, April 19th, the Juno Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, an uncommon denomination, will be celebrating Earth Day. All are invited to attend at 10 a.m. at the Temple Sukkot Shalom on Cordova Street in Douglas. More information at juuf.org. This message brought to you by the Juno Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
It's 32 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon here on 14th of April. In the studio with me now is Gwen Bayless, who's here to talk about the Audubon program for April 16th. Gwen, thank you for coming down to the station.
Thank you.
So this is the last program for this season.
That's correct. That's the last of our evening programs. We do have our outside field trips ongoing throughout the spring.
What's happening? What are you talking about this go-around?
We're going to talk about Southeast Alaska's birding festivals. Well, we're going to talk about three of them. There's actually four. But we're going to save talking about the one in Haines, maybe for the fall. We're going to focus on Ketchikan's Alaska Hummingbird Festival, Wrangell's Stikeen River Birding Festival, and the Yakutat Tern Festival.
When do those happen?
The dates for Ketchikan's Alaska Hummingbird Festival is all through April. They have things going on all month, and the Stikeen Festival is April 30 to May 3rd, and the Yakutat Tern Festival is May 28 to 31.
Is birding a good experience for the people who like to rise late?
Actually, you can see a lot of birds later on in the day. Maybe it's not the best to try to get the dawn chorus or the songbirds if you're a late riser, but migratory shorebirds are eating all the time, and it's more tidally influenced. You might have better bird watching in the evening, for that matter. A lot of the raptors, the large hawks, they'll sleep in too. They wait until the sun comes out and there's some thermals to catch. Hummingbirds who are cold, especially during migration time, may have to eat a little bit before they start moving around too. So the late risers can definitely catch some birds.
What's the most common bird in the Juneau area?
I don't know the answer to that, to be honest. To think about, you know, it kind of depends on where you are and when, what you're going to see the most of.
Cool. And you have other activities going on after the night, after the evening presentations?
Yeah, we have our field trips. So every Saturday morning, we have a bird walk all spring. And if you want to see a schedule of those, they're on our website, JunoAudubonSociety.org. They're all free, and we encourage birders and wannabe birders, people of all birding levels, to come. We really hope to involve more beginning birders, and we also hope to entertain the experts out there.
Besides dressing for the weather, what kind of things should one bring to go birding?
Binoculars, but if you don't have binoculars, we actually have some to loan out. It would be helpful to contact the field trip leader beforehand if you know that's going to be the case, but we usually bring along some extra ones for our beginning birders. So, yeah, really just dressing for the weather and being ready to open your eyes and ears.
And we'll be hearing about those later on KTUO, I hope.
Okay.
All right, I think I have all the information I need. When is the presentation on the 16th?
That'll be at 7 p.m. in Centennial Hall's Egan Room. And I should say that we're going to have a number of speakers. We have Susan Ohlers coming down from Yakutat. She's a biologist up there and one of the organizers of that festival. And we are also going to have our own Bob Armstrong, who has been to these festivals and has taken some great pictures and is always a wealth of knowledge and entertainment.
He was the guest of honor at one of these festivals recently in the past couple of years.
Yeah, actually, yeah, he was the keynote speaker in Yakutat, and I believe that I know he's presented at the Ketchikan Festival, and I believe that he's also presented at the Stikeen Festival. So, yeah, he has lots of great photos and insight into these festivals. And I'll also be talking a little bit about Ketchikan and Wrangell's festivals with some material that I've gotten from organizers of them. Unfortunately, they couldn't make it up, but I do have some photos, and we're going to give out a lot of materials. We have some new birding guides for Wrangell and for Yakutat, and event schedules and logistical information about attending these festivals.
All right, Gwen Bayless, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
One more time, the details about where and when the presentation is.
7 p.m. Centennial Hall on Thursday.
Thank you for coming by.
This is Bird Note. Evolutionary time is long. Against that yardstick, the length of time humans have been living in cities is a blip. But that blip has had huge consequences for birds, as John Marsloff explores in his book, Welcome to Suburbia.
This is a rather novel selective force, but it's a potent selective force on birds.
Marsloff is professor of wildlife science at the University of Washington in Seattle.
We change climate, we change food, we change the distribution of habitats. We add new predators, we take away other predators, we bring in competitors. We reassort the birds that live together in our cities in ways that they haven't been together in the past.
Which sometimes makes for uneasy bedfellows.
The northwestern crow was a resident crow on the west coast of the U.S., and the American crow was more in the east. And because of changes in habitat from planting as well as urbanization in the Midwest, the American crow came across the U.S. and has colonized the west coast.
And may be genetically swamping the northwestern crow. The Anna's hummingbird's another example, competing against the native rufous hummingbird in the Pacific Northwest.
That didn't occur even 20 or 30 years ago. There were not Anna's hummingbirds overwintering here. And as a result, the more native rufous hummingbird is now dealing with another larger, more aggressive, already here hummingbird when it arrives from its migratory path down south.
For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Join us for a live television recording at 360 with the Native Jazz Duo. Award-winning musicians Ed Littlefield and Christian Fabian will take us on an intimate exploration of their unique jazz arrangements that artfully blend swing, bebop, and funk with folk and native melodies. The one-hour concert is at 360 in the K2 building on Thursday, April 16th at 7 p.m. Admission is $10 at the door. Info at 360north.org.
Chasuha shaki, chasuha shaki, kaudija, hede sas, yekushita du huati kada aya, hey, hi ina, chasuha shaki, chasuha shaki, kaudija, hede sas, yekushita du huati kada aya, hey, Na,
خشد کی چت خشد کی کردی چت ایت ساز یکو شیتا جو پاسی کاده آیا هی
sampling of the Native Jazz Duo. They'll be performing in concert Thursday, April 16th at 7 p.m. at 360 in the KTUO building. Doors open at 6:30. $10 admission charge at the door. Also on this weekend is the Juno Arts and Humanities Council concert, the Metalis Brass Group. Here's some of the music now.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
It's about 46 minutes before past the hour, and you're tuned to Juno Afternoon. Our next guests are Kate Pressing and Kristen Bartlett here to talk about the Safe Graduation Party, which is coming up. Thank you for coming by the station.
Thank you.
So, what makes it so safe?
Well, we get them all in Centennial Hall and lock them in.
I wish I could be there with my daughter.
No, we invite all the seniors in town from the Juneau School District high schools as well as from the home schools in our community. It really is a community-wide event. It's organized by parents and funded by parents, families, and organizations and businesses in town. And so the three Juneau School District high schools have their graduation ceremonies on Sunday, May 24th, and that night at 9 p.m., the things will get rolling down at Centennial Hall. The doors open, I think, at 9, and at 10 is when the party really starts. Students can come. They have to show ID. They can bring one guest, and they're admitted until 11, and at 11, the doors are closed, and then the party goes on until 2. And about 2:15, there's a drawing courtesy of Valley Medical Care for $2,015 to the lucky graduate of the class of 2015.
Sounds like there's a lot of planning involved.
There really is. It's definitely parent-driven. And so the parents are all coming together, working as volunteers to coordinate and to help fund and to look for businesses to help fund for this big party.
I've been associated with them for a couple of times, and there's sometimes there's a theme.
There is. This year's theme is kind of a glow neon theme. And so the we're encouraging the kids to be coming in wearing, like, white, and there'll be some black lights that'll help them glow, and we've got a lot of decorations that will go around that theme. So it should be a lot of fun.
And how many students are you expecting?
We're expecting about 500. Last year, 400 graduates came and 100 guests, so we get nearly all of the graduates in town to show up, and so that's one reason why we need the support of our community, because we want to keep making it worth their while to come. This event takes about $25,000, and the students can come and have a great time. There are lots of games, great food, and lots of prizes. There's cash and electronics and gift certificates. And so everyone comes down and leaves with a gift and hopefully a prize. And on that note, we want to thank some of our major contributors, the City and Borough of Juneau, Valley Medical Care. Bullwinkle's provides a pizza for every graduate in town. We have significant sponsorship from Alaska Litho, First Impressions, Bartlett Regional Hospital, Centennial Hall, Gastineau Guiding, Morris Engineering Group, Sea Alaska, and Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority. And then also the students are teaming up with First Bank, and they're collecting food for the food bank this year as another fundraiser.
Wow, that's like a lot of activity.
So one thing we really need is volunteers, and we also need donations. So if people have food or prizes or ideas for activities, they should come to the Juneau Safe Graduation website, and that's junosafegrad.weebly.com. And you can find out how to volunteer, you can find out how to donate, and we also ask that all of the families in town who have graduates donate if they can.
And from what I understand, the idea is you get them to come to Centennial Hall, go in Centennial Hall, and they can't come out and then go back in.
That's right. Once they come in, they don't go back out.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Well, there's just it's a really fun night for these kids. And so we're going to have a casino. We're going to have, like Kristen said, there's going to be a lot of really good food. There's going to be dancing. We have all different areas of Centennial Hall will be set up in different ways. So we kind of meet the needs of the kind of the personalities of all the different kids that will be coming. And so that's really important piece to it as well. And the other thing is that we've made it really easy this year for people to both volunteer and to contribute, because if you do go to the website that Kristen just mentioned, the junosafegrad.weebly.com, there's a PayPal on there, and so that's new this year where you can just click and you can donate that way. There's also a link to be able to volunteer. You can just sign up. You can pick your time and what activities you want to be involved in, and then it's all right there on that website. So we've really made it easy this year.
Can you repeat the website address, please?
The website address, again, is junosafegrad.weebly.com.
There's also a link on the Juno School District website. If you go to the homepage at junoschools.org and look under links, you can get to it that way, too.
So you see about 500 students show up. How many volunteers are expected?
Well, we're hoping for a lot, or else we're going to be busy. But I think that there are typically over 100 volunteers, and there are community organizations that come out and participate year after year, too. This is really a Juno Safe Graduation committee, in that some people have been volunteering for years. Some don't have kids, or some folks, their kids have graduated. So people really have a good time, and it's a really good cause. And if people want to get involved, there's a planning meeting on Thursday, April 22nd at Thunder Mountain High School at 5:30 p.m.
And one more thing is, it's primarily been the senior parents that have been coordinating, but we would love to have parents of other high school students involved also, because this will continue to go on hopefully in the other years, and it's really nice to have people that understand what the project is all about as they get ready for their seniors as well. Additionally, the graduations of the Juno School District students are all occurring on that day, so all senior parents are also really excited about their kids graduating. So having other people in the community volunteer is really important.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
tuned into Juneau Afternoon. Strong wind is expected from this evening through late tonight. Windy weather and rain continuing. Low temperatures around 37 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, rain showers, high temperatures around 44 degrees. Thursday, rain showers with high temperatures around 44 degrees. Tomorrow on Juneau Afternoon, Jimmy Race will be your host. We'll learn about a fundraiser to provide a service dog for a local resident. Pat Race will be here to highlight upcoming downtown cleanup events and the Downtown Improvement Group. We'll learn about the Sneeze, a collaboration between Perseverance Theater and UAS. Rick Caulfield will be here with a preview of his talk before the Juneau World Affairs Council about Greenland. And I'll get the details about the opening of the upcoming Juneau Lyric Opera Gala. That writer's almanac, Burnout, Music and More, tomorrow at 3 on Juneau Afternoon.